Engaging presentations on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
It is great to be back in Michigan. You already have a great candidate for governor. I was with him just a couple of months ago in another part of the state. But I bring that up because with my longstanding relationship with Right to Life of Michigan, with Barbara Listing, who's here, and with the various chapters from one end of the state to the other, for a while now, I've been going to so many of these banquets and so many of these great events, meeting so many great people like you, many of whom you are in touch with us throughout the year anyway, that two things have resulted. Number one, Brian Cusack and I could easily do each other's talks. And number two, the rumor was circulating for a while anyway that Father Frank was running for governor of Michigan. Maybe next time we'll actually do that, depending how things work out. Brothers and sisters, it really is a delight to be here. It is an honor to be able to encourage you a little bit at a moment which, as we just heard from the congressman, is very true, is indeed, I will say, the most important of the midterm elections that we have faced in this country. Now, usually you hear the political wisdom, the political experience and history telling us that in a midterm election, when the White House has 2 years prior changed parties, as happened 2 years ago, the president's party loses seats in the midterm. But brothers and sisters, this is not a dogma. 2 years ago, we went off the charts in political history. The pollsters' models didn't work, didn't take account of the change that is happening in America. They didn't know yet how to see it. They didn't know yet how to measure it. And now, 2 years later, if what happened in 2016 was so extraordinary and so surprising, we have less reason than ever to feel bound by any kind of political prediction. We are making history. We made history 2 years ago. We're going to do it again this year. Now, the president's been doing something pretty smart in having these rallies that he's been having around the country. Have you been watching the rallies that the president's been having in various cities? Now listen, we gotta watch those rallies. Let me tell you why. We just sent out one of our email blasts to all our people around the country just saying, watch these rallies, and we put the links to all the different rally speeches. Because what the president is doing here, he is, of course, he's giving a message of the progress that has been made in these last 2 years. He's giving a message about that because the people who worked so hard, including us in this room, the people who worked so hard 2 years ago to make political history need to know that it worked, not just by the people who were elected, starting with the president, but need to know that it was worth it, need to know that it worked, need to know and see the fruits that came from all that hard work, and that the success was not just a matter of celebrating, but that the success is now a matter of policy. It's now a matter of the highest stock market numbers, the lowest unemployment numbers, the strongest military, the best secured borders, lower taxes. And brothers and sisters, for the cause that brings us together tonight, we have made immense progress. We can go through, in fact, we just released at Priests for Life a video just this morning, talking about 10 in 10 bullet points talking about the pro-life accomplishments that have been made on the federal level under President Trump just in these last 2 years. And I'll tell you, just by summary fashion, and so many of you know this so well already, but both on the state level and on the federal level and on the international level, not millions, but billions of dollars have been taken away from Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry. You know, I was asked during the campaign 2 years ago to serve with a number of other Catholic leaders on an advisory committee that then candidate Donald Trump pulled together, Catholic Advisory Committee. And he also pulled together a pro-life advisory committee. Because this is a man who knows what he doesn't know and knows who he has to surround himself with to learn it. And so when it comes to the issues of abortion and related topics, a group of us got together and we regularly gave input to the campaign and then during the transition as well, and now even while he is president. And we were told during the campaign one sentence that I will always remember. I was told by one of his top advisors, one of his top staff, "Father, if he gets elected, he will do everything that every pro-life president has done in the past and more." And he has proven that to be true. One simple example, he did not just reinstate the Mexico City policy that President Reagan initially put into place to keep money away from those agencies that perform or promote abortion overseas. It's been like a ping pong ball back and forth. As soon as a new president is inaugurated, under President Reagan we had it, under President Clinton it went away, under George W. Bush it came back, under Obama it went away, under Trump it came back, but it didn't just come back, it was strengthened, it was expanded, it was applied across the board to every agency of the government, and that's the difference between it having kept $500 million in the past from the abortion industry to now keeping $8.8 billion away from the abortion industry. Judges, a week ago yesterday, Alveda King, who works with us at Priest for Life, and by the way, she sends her greetings here tonight. I know she's spoken in all different parts of Michigan, and she sends her prayerful greetings. But she and I were together at the White House for a special little ceremony in the East Room. And we sat there, and everyone was taking their seats, and as soon as everyone was seated, at a certain point from the our far end of the room, we heard vigorous applause erupt, because the person who walked into the room at that point was Senator Mitch McConnell. And the applause erupted in that room because of the way that he shepherded, guided the Senate through this recent confirmation process. And then, of course, the announcement was made, President of the United States, accompanied by Justice Anthony Kennedy and Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And they came in and they spoke, and then the judicial oath, you know, there are two oaths that a Supreme Court justice takes. One is the constitutional oath that every federal official needs to take, and the other is the judicial oath that he will carry out the specific duties of a Supreme Court justice in an impartial manner. The judicial oath was administered. And then he shared remarks that I thought, brothers and sisters, were a beautiful moment of healing, or at least the beginning of healing, for a country, not to mention for a family, that was deeply wounded by the behavior of the Democrats and the far left groups that they're associated with during this confirmation process, which they turned into a national disgrace. They turned it into a circus. They turned it into an attack, not only on Brett Kavanaugh, but on the very principle of due process, presumption of innocence. They attacked foundational principles of civilization. I was looking in vain for one of the Democrat members of the Senate Judiciary Committee to just give a simple answer to the question, should he not be presumed innocent? I wish one of them had just said, yes, of course. But no, it was nowhere to be heard. And then, of course, when in the absence of any corroboration to the accusations that were made, accusations which, if they are made by anyone against anyone, should always be heard, should always be taken seriously, should always be looked into. But it's one thing to say that we respectfully listen to anyone who makes an accusation. It's one thing to say we will seriously look into these things whenever they arise. But it's quite another thing to say that simply because someone makes an accusation and they sound believable, that without corroboration, they can derail a Supreme Court confirmation process. That is not something that we can ever permit in this country. And brothers and sisters, fairness prevailed. Reason prevailed. Except that when you saw the mobs. Now, many of you, I'm sure, and so many throughout the state, come to the March for Life in Washington, D.C. every January. We march by the Supreme Court, don't we? We have reason to be there, don't we? We have serious reason to be there. We're protesting the most serious injustice of all time with the killing of these babies by abortion. But you know, you see these massive crowds, you hear the chanting, you hear the singing, you see the praying, but you know what you don't see? You don't see people storming the steps of the Supreme Court and banging and shrieking and clawing at the doors of the Supreme Court and yelling, shut it down, shut it down, shut it down. If anyone were to ever consider that there were justification for that kind of action, we would be the ones holding the justification. Sitting in front of a Holocaust of greater proportions than anything that any genocidal dictator in human history has done, as we sit and look at what abortion has done to this nation, if anyone were to have a justification for that kind of behavior, it would be us. But we don't do that because we know that there are processes in this country. We know that no matter how fundamental the disagreements are that we may have with our fellow citizens, this great nation gives us a way to advocate for justice. This great nation gives us a way that we can all be equal in being able to express our opinion. This great nation gives us a way that we can not only lobby those who are in leadership, we can choose them. And when we need to, we can remove them from leadership. It gives us a way to cast our vote. It gives us a way to protest and gather peacefully. It gives us a way in the end that when those processes have run their course, we may still disagree with the outcome, but we can come together still as one nation. I was not pleased, and I'm sure we can all say the same. When Bill Clinton became president of the United States, when Barack Obama became president of the United States, I was not a happy camper. But nobody ever heard me say, and nobody ever heard you say, not my president. You know what? He has destructive ideas. He oversaw destructive policies. But he was the president of the United States. And we as citizens who vehemently disagree with him in philosophy and in policy could still say that. That's why America works. That's why we, unlike so many countries on the earth, have stable elections. That's why we have peaceful transitions of power. Because when Barack Obama became president of the United States, from the very first moment, I committed myself to oppose his policies with every ounce of strength that I had and to make sure that he got replaced by a pro-life president. And that's what we all did. And we used the process. And we made the speeches, and we wrote the articles, and we persuaded our fellow citizens, and we lobbied, and we communicated. But we didn't go around saying, "Not my president." And when people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and others were placed on the Supreme Court, and Elena Kagan and Justice Sotomayor, we didn't like that either, but we did not say, "Not my judge." Yes, they are justices on the Supreme Court. You see, we're able to acknowledge that. And we're able to say, you know, there's a process in America. And if you don't like the kind of judges that you're getting, you know what you do? You elect the kind of president that's going to appoint the ones that you do like, and you elect the Senate that's going to confirm them. But you don't go running up the steps of the Supreme Court and banging on the doors and acting like animals and claw at the doors and say, "Not my judge, not my judge." And you don't go around deceiving people by saying, "Ooh, if we get into power, we're going to impeach them." You realize what they're doing now? They're trying to rile up the base by using this word impeachment and playing on the ignorance of people. As senators, as members of the House of Representatives, these Democrats know full well that they cannot remove President Trump from office. They cannot. They cannot remove Justice Kavanaugh from the Supreme Court. Does anyone seriously think for one second that if they could not stop him from being put on the court, that they're going to be able to take him off? You know, impeachment is there for a reason, but you know how many federal officials have been impeached in our history? 19. But less than half of them have been removed from office, because the House of Representatives can draft articles of impeachment for serious enough reasons, if they have a majority. But then the United States Senate has to vote by a super majority after a trial, 67 votes, to actually remove from office. That no matter what the outcome is of this midterm election, that is simply not going to happen. And you know what? These leaders who are saying this, they know that full well. And so what they're trying to do is play on the ignorance of people and actually make voters think that if they have an animus against the president or against Kavanaugh or whatever, oh, let's vote Democrat and they're going to be removed from office. That's what they hear when they hear the word impeachment. They are being deceived. Brothers and sisters, you and I can be proud that we know how America works. We appreciate the processes that our founding fathers gave us, and we use those processes. But we do not, and we cannot permit that those who apparently have no more respect for these processes, that those who are willing to have some of their representatives get up and say, "When you see people from that cabinet, you get in their face, you create a crowd, you tell them they're not welcome in this restaurant and at that gas station." You saw Maxine Waters saying this? Did you see what Eric Holder said the other day? Yeah. We're taking that video clip and showing it all over the place. He said at a campaign rally for a Democratic candidate, he said to the people, "You know, Michelle Obama always said, when they go low, we go high." And he looked at them and he said, No. When they go low, we kick them." And then he said, "That's what this new Democrat Party is about." Thank you, Mr. Holder. I'm going to let everybody know that. That's what this new Democrat Party is about. And as the president said recently, you don't put matches in the hands of an arsonist. And you don't give votes to people who believe in mob rule. You know, some people are pretty surprised to hear a priest talking this way. But let me tell you something. We have turned a corner. We as a nation have turned a serious corner. It's no longer about differences of opinion, differences of policy, differences of philosophy. I mean, you can say, well, I'm going to be, you know, well, actually, you can't say I'm going to be neutral about matters of policy or principle or philosophy. But I mean, there was a time when the difference between the parties was fundamentally, well, look, we have different worldviews. The worldviews are expressed in the party platform. Those worldviews lead to particular policy preferences. Those are expressed in the party platform. And one of the services we provide to voters, and we gave each of you one tonight on your inside your program at your table, is a one-sheet party platform comparison piece. We distribute this all over the country prior to the elections, and it gives you, you know, about a dozen key issues, and all it does, without expressing any preference one way or the other, all it does is quotes from the Republican and Democrat Party platforms. So it's very helpful for people to assess how they want to vote. You know, I was giving these out recently at a Christian concert out in the Midwest, and somebody said, I gave a talk, I mentioned that we had these flyers there, and someone came up to the table later, oh, Father, I want to get that party comparison piece. Where is that? And which one did you say? Now, which party is the Liberal Party? So don't presume anything about what people know about where the parties stand. But that, by all means, use that. You'll see on the bottom there a web address where you can download more copies or order them. As a matter of fact, out on the table, out where you came in this evening, we've got hundreds and hundreds of these. So if any of you want to take them tonight for your groups or in any way that you can distribute them, please take them. And then you can order from us as many more as you can use between now and Election Day. But the point I'm making is we've gotten to the point where the differences we're looking at here are no longer simply philosophical or policy differences. We've turned a corner here. We have a party that has gone completely out of control and is attacking what this country is about. It's one thing to say, you know, we're all Americans. We love America. We just believe in different policies. We're going to want to try in trying to love America and lead the country in the right direction. We believe we got to go this way, but we'll debate it with you. We'll do some trial and error. We'll try to get our people in and see if it works. It's not like that anymore. The left has become completely unhinged. They are out of control. And it is time that we stand up and say this clearly. Yeah. Brothers and sisters, this midterm election is going to be very much about the 2016 Trump voters. People came out of the woodwork. People came out and voting for the first time saying, wow, I really believe that it's time for a change. It's time for us to elect a president who's not a politician. It's time for a straight-talking fighter for America. It's time to put America first again. It's time to make America great again. People came out because he was speaking their language. He was connecting with their hearts, their emotions, their convictions, their patriotism. This midterm election is going to be about those voters coming out again. It's going to be about part two of that vote that they cast 2 years ago. And every one of us here in this room can reach these people. We know these people. We've got to show these people the progress that has been made. And again, that goes back to what I was saying before. This is why, you know, the president is having these rallies and making clear what the progress is. A lot has been done. It's about showing them the progress that has been made, but letting them know this, that although President Trump's name is not on the ballot, he is on the ballot. He is. His philosophies, his policies, his vision for America, and his ability in the next 2 years to do the things that a president can do, like sign good legislation. He's going to sit there in the White House with pen in hand these next 2 years, ready to sign a bill defunding Planned Parenthood completely. And he's going to sit there in the White House these next 2 years with pen in hand, ready to sign a bill that's going to say babies in the womb who are capable of feeling pain from 20 weeks forward will, from this point forward, be protected by law. And he's going to sit there with a pen in hand, ready to nominate the most stellar judges in America, not only for the Supreme Court when more vacancies come, when, not if, but when. But not just that, not even primarily that, all of the appellate courts. He has successfully put more pro-life, pro-constitutional judges on the courts of the 13 circuits across America than any president has been able to do in the first 2 years of his presidency. But here's the point, and here's what we have to go back to the Trump voters of 2016 and say. We got to say, look, we got the person in the White House who's ready to do all this for us, but he's not going to be able to sign that legislation defunding Planned Parenthood or protecting these babies unless the Congress sends him the bill. And he's not going to be able to sign those judicial appointments, or at least he's not going to get them confirmed, unless that Senate confirms them. So yeah, he's on the ballot, all right. And if the Trump voters don't come out and vote again, their vote will have been half wasted 2 years ago. And now we're going to have, we're not going to have 2 more years of progress. We're going to have 2 years, were, God forbid, the Democrats to take over the House, you know what we're going to have? This agenda gets stopped in its tracks, although the Senate, they can keep confirming judges if they're under Republican control. They can keep confirming the right kind of judges. But the House, they will be morning, noon, and night, 365 days a year, talking about impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. And they will be wasting the time of the American people, muddying the waters, and doing what they do best, obstructing. Obstructing, obstructing. Brothers and sisters, you know, it's really, we always make progress for this great cause of life and of freedom when we nationalize electoral races. What do I mean? We've got the races for the House of Representatives going on across the state and from coast to coast. And sure, people who live in particular congressional districts need to think about the local issues that affect that district. But brothers and sisters, when the balance of power is at issue, is at stake, as it is now, it's conceivable that which party controls the U.S. House of Representatives and whether what I just said is going to happen or not could boil down to one single congressional district. It could conceivably be one of your congressional districts that decides the entire leadership of the House of Representatives. We don't know how it's going to play out. A lot of the analysis right now shows it, you know, 50-50. Suppose that were to be the case. We have to presume that's going to be the case. And what that means is, now I don't know that you can find one nowadays. You know, when I started out with Priests for Life, there were dozens of pro-life Democrats in the House of Representatives, dozens of them. Now you can count them on one hand. What happened? As I said, everything has become more extreme, more unhinged. But the point is, let's say theoretically, Well, yeah, there's a Democrat running for the House in my district, and you know, I like him or her for various reasons. Maybe somewhere we find a pro-life Democrat running. I don't know of any. But the point is, we like him for this reason, for that reason, for the other reason. If that race were to tip the balance of power in the House of Representatives, it doesn't matter how good that member's policies are. It doesn't matter. Because any kind of pro-life bill, if the Democrats are in control of the House, it's not even going to get out of committee. It's not even going to come to the floor for a vote. The candidate might be saying, oh, I'm pro-life. I'll vote for pro-life. You're not going to get a chance to vote for pro-life if your party is in power, because they're going to kill the bill in the committees, which now they control if they have the majority. You see, people, unless they understand how this works, they could easily get swept away if they just focus on the candidate. You can't just focus on the candidate. You got to be looking at the bigger picture, the balance of power, and help people understand that it is not just the candidate that you're putting into office, it is a party. And the positions of the parties matter, and it's necessary to talk about it, and it's necessary to stop pretending that this is just a difference of policy. We have got people now on the left, we have got these groups, and many of these people who are in Congress who literally hate America, want to change the policies and the principles on which it was founded. We will not and cannot let that happen. Cannot. Let me conclude here. I know we can talk forever. I've put on your tables, and I'm great. Kathy, thank you so much. You and the board of Livingston County Right to Life, you guys do a great job. Thank you, Barbara, again, for what the group does across the state, Right to Life of Michigan. But thank you for letting me put on your tables those yellow cards that you have. That's a way for us, many of you are in touch with me already and my team, Alveda King and all of our people. But Phil, if you would fill that out for me, just so that I can know who you are. And I'm just gonna mention quickly some of the other things on the table, because I'm sure we're gonna run out. And if you want me to send these to you, even if we run out tonight, you can just indicate it on that card. I've got a devotional here, Pro-Life Reflections for Every Day. Little prayer and reflection for every day of the year to nourish your pro-life commitment and spirituality. Another little pro-life prayer book called In the Palm of His Hand. Some election materials. Brochure called 10 Responses to Pro-Abortion Politicians and Voting with a Clear Conscience. A book about abolishing abortion. This is strategy for the church and the state. What must we do to end abortion? It's called Abolishing Abortion. Shockwaves, what abortion's impact is on the whole family. Not just mom and dad, but what about the grandparents? What about the siblings? Children who survive and who had a sibling aborted. Shockwaves is very powerful. And finally, Proclaiming the Message of Life. The Sunday readings that we hear in church every Sunday of the year, for all three cycles, pro-life reflections on the reading. So this is great, not only for preachers, but for the rest of us who listen to those readings every week. So friends, please, I'll be staying around as long as whoever's the last person that's going to leave tonight, I'll still be here. Because I want to greet you personally. I want to thank you for your commitment to this cause. I want to encourage you. My whole team sends its greetings to you, and we're ready to join hands and hearts and resources, not only for victory in this coming election, but for victory over abortion itself. Because mark my words, we will be having banquets like this soon, celebrating the fact that our unborn brothers and sisters have once again received the protection of their lives that they deserve just like the rest of us. Abortion's days are numbered. Let's push that date closer and closer with every ounce of our strength, and let's never lose confidence that we are not just working for victory. We are working from victory. We start with victory. We start with victory because the one who made us has conquered death. The one who made us has come to save us. The one who made us says to the kingdom of death, you no longer have any authority here. Be gone, because by my own death and resurrection, I have robbed you of your power. And the one who says that to us tonight is with us and working through us and speaking through us and transforming this nation through us. And his name is Jesus Christ. Thank you all. God bless you.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.